Blog Talk Radio.
Corner, bringing you timely topics from all corners of the world. I hope that this week brings no technical difficulties and that you can enjoy the entire broadcast. And tonight, I am very happy to announce that we are going to have several important people in their fields.
Yeah, hello, everybody. This is Richard Cameron, Director of Radio Operations with Open Rebellion Radio, and we just had a little bit of a problem with the with your host, Cindy Gross' telephone connection, and so she's going to be calling in very quickly. We'll just take a quick break here, and we will be right back with Cindy.
Are you as frustrated as we are? Tired of government representatives who don't think protecting your rights is a priority? We know you're out there, patriots with a passion for restoring our constitutional republic, but you might not know how you can make a difference. Knowledge is power. James Madison said, "A people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power that knowledge gives." Our nation is in crisis. The rule of law is being usurped by the rule of the elite few. What would our founders do? They staged a rebellion. They secured for us the blessings of a republic. It's up to us to keep it. Maybe another revolution is in order, this one fought with the weapons of knowledge. Join us for Open Rebellion Thursdays at 6 p.m. Central Time.
And I'm back.
And Cindy Gross is back with us. Cindy, thank you.
I'm so glad that I just said to the audience, I hope that this week doesn't bring technical difficulties, and I hope that the remainder of the show will be smooth and entertaining and very, very informative, because we have a lot to cover tonight. Last week, I told you that we were going to discuss topics relating to celebrating and cleaning up, and I am very happy to tell you that the topics are very much related in a lot of ways to the season that we are in. The first topic we're going to talk about is celebrating the fall holiday season. Last week, we had a discussion on foods relating to the Jewish New Year, Hispanic Heritage Month, Oktoberfest, the change of the weather, all seasonal foods, and tonight we're going to bring you the ideas through drinking, through alcoholic beverages, and how you could relate them into recipes and drink them in happy hours and in ceremonies. And the first person we're going to have on the phone with us is Pearl Schwartz. Hello, Pearl. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Hello, Cindy.
Hi,
how
Pearl.
Are you?
Welcome Hi. To my audience at Cindy's Corner. Pearl is one of my go-to people whenever I need a wine, a quality alcohol, an idea for a beverage, for an entertaining theme, etc. And we're very lucky, even though she has a store in New York, through her website, she has an international clientele. And people call her for advice just like I do. So welcome to the Cindy's Corner, Pearl Schwartz.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, tell everybody exactly where they can find you so that they can follow up with you after we speak.
Okay, they can reach me on Facebook, at Karen Wines, and we're in the process of doing a website. So as soon as I have that, it's going to be on my Facebook page, so they can reach me there too. And I can give them my number at my local retail store, which is it's 718-263-5921.
Pearl is located in Queens, New York, but she is so accommodating. She's willing to work out arrangements to get anything you need anywhere possible. So we're talking about holiday celebrations. We're talking about the Jewish New Year, which is coming upon us Sunday night. We're talking about Hispanic Heritage Month. And we're talking about Oktoberfest and the change of seasons and some of the popular trends that are happening in the fall. So tell us some of the things that you find that are seasonal, that are now, that are popular, that people are requesting.
Okay, because we're in the National Hispanic Heritage Month and the Jewish New Year is fast approaching, I'd like to tell you about my personal favorite Spanish wine. It's the Rioja Crianza from LV Winery. LV Winery is a family-owned company, and they only cooperate with sellers which understand and appreciate the kosher project. So what actually makes a wine kosher? To be considered kosher, Sabbath observant Jews supervise and handle the entire winemaking process, from the time the grapes are crushed until the wine is bottled. What is a Rioja? A Rioja is a classic region of Spain. It produces some of the best Tempranillo-based wines in the world. Some are ready to drink young. Others are spending years in a barrel and bottle before hitting the shelves. And the term Crianza means wine that is aged for 2 years with a minimum of 12 months in oak and 12 months in a bottle before being sold. Some wines are just named Rioja because it's from the Rioja region of Spain, and some are named Rioja Crianza, that means that it's aged for a minimum of 2 years. The Rioja Crianza tend to have more body and helps them pair well with heavier foods like roast meats and rich sauces. So that's one of my really favorite wines, and I drink them all the time. But now, especially that we're in National Hispanic Heritage Month, that's probably a deal for that.
I have to explain to people, kosher wines are not just for people who are Jewish who observe kosher dietary laws. These wines that Pearl sells and Pearl discusses are appreciated and win awards internationally in Jewish and non-Jewish wines and beverage competitions. Do you have another wine that you could recommend that you would think would be go? For example, we eat now a fish as next week as part of our holiday. What is a nice wine to buy for a company for Rosh Hashanah or a fish?
Sure. For fish, I tend to drink Sauvignon Blanc because Sauvignon Blanc has a citrusy finish to it, and it just pairs very well with fish. And there are some great Sauvignon Blancs out there, like Dalton has a beautiful Sauvignon Blanc that's a reserve, and they use great grapes for it. It's just made very well, and it has a very nice finish to it. It's citrusy, it's nice, and it pairs very well with fish. Then there's Beniamina also has a great Sauvignon Blanc. It's also a reserve. That means they use good grapes for that, and also works very well for that. Also, if you like a lighter Chardonnay, would also be great. Like Hagafin Cellars, which is based in California, has a beautiful Chardonnay. It's not that heavy, so it works well with fish, and it's just it almost tastes buttery like. It's so well done and
it's
so
delicious. It's delicious. It just swims down your throat. It's really good.
Oh yeah.
Can you recommend a nice Riesling or German wine for Oktoberfest in case you don't want a beer?
Oh yeah. There's so many nice Rieslings. There's one Riesling that I particularly enjoy, and that's the Gersberger Riesling, and that's made in France. It's in the Alsace region of France. That's borders with Germany, and that's an amazing Riesling. Why it's so fantastic is because it's nice and crisp and still has a slightly sweet finish to it. So it works well with most foods. You can have it with pasta, or we can have it with fish, or even with chicken. It would work well. It's just a fantastic wine. And also, like Pinot Gris from the same region, they have excellent Pinot Gris in that region, but it's also works very well. It's also like semi, like closer to the dry side, but not totally dry. And that would also work very well with fish and all everything else, like lighter foods, basically.
I remember last year, I actually got in your store a delicious apple whiskey, and it comes in October, November, and actually goes so well with the change of the seasons. Can you tell us about some of these seasonal liquors that are going on now that you're having tastings for and that go really well as people are preparing for Halloween, Thanksgiving, all those kind of celebrations?
Oh, for sure.
What are some of the seasonal liquors you have?
That apple whiskey we're talking about is from Panther Distillery. It's called Spiked Apple Whiskey, and that's a corn whiskey. It tastes like your mother's apple pie. It's just very well done and so delicious. It's a really fun drink, and you can drink it just like that over rocks, or you can just add it to any, like, hot tea. It would just enhance the flavor. It's a delicious drink. Also, sangrias is a very good idea for this time of year. Although there are many interpretations what a traditional sangria is, I found that it typically requires like a few components, like fruit, apples or oranges, orange juice, a sweetener like brown sugar or cane sugar, a liquor like brandy or rum, and a bold, fruity, dry Spanish red wine, like in Tempranillo or Ganache or Rioja, and, of course, ice for chilling. For this version, I went with brandy because as soon as I smelled the brandy, I immediately thought, this smells like sangria. But, of course, if you rather use rum, be my guest. And then I can give you the recipe for that if you want.
Well, I'm actually going to follow up with an article so that my listeners and can have it ready 24/7, printed through Madison's. It's funny, you mentioned about all the desserts that you can make with it. Last week we talked about all the heavy meats. I actually used the apple cider whiskey in a brisket recipe, and it just absorbed it, like with a barbecue apple whiskey, and everybody went crazy for it. So there are many different ways how to use all these seasonal liquors. You also have a full range of tequilas for, of course, margaritas. You have a load of rums for mojitos. Because the Hispanic Heritage Month is really all the Spanish countries and heritage backgrounds, not just one area. So I know you have a lot of that. Any one or two tequilas that you could recommend or you think or what's popular now that people are looking towards?
Oh, yeah. There's, of course, tequila Patron is probably the most popular one. Because it's so well advertised, and also it's very nice. It's really well done. So that's Patron is, I have that. And then I have a tequila. It's called Dalian Tequila. It's also very, very well priced, and it's so fine and elegant. I happen to like the softer tasting tequilas that are just not too rough. And it just works beautifully. The Dalian tequila happens to be so well-priced and so delicious. So I like that. And there is a whole range of tequilas, like starting from, let's say, $10 going up to $100. So we have a big range of tequilas and rums and scotches and bourbons and gins, everything you need for your alcohol needs.
And I'm going to have my last sort of two cents to add in, because I know you sell this, and it's my favorite time of the year to have it, and that is my Morad Winery lychee wine, passion fruit wine, and pomegranate wines. And for those who are not Jewish, do not know that we celebrate many fruits, and these are considered new fruits that we can make a special, what we call Hashecha, called prayer for, or the understanding of celebrating the growth of these new fruits. And they are just absolutely delicious. And anybody who wants to try something really different and seasonal, you would agree with me probably, they would love these wines, because they are so popular. And I, in fact, make a martini adding in the vodka with a little bit of the lychee wine and canned lychees. That is really incredible. They just enhance anything. And I know these are probably very popular right now, and I know everybody who tastes them just loves them. So I'm sure that they're a big seller for you now.
Oh, yes, they're a big seller for me now and all year round. I have to tell you, people love them. They're nice and sweet. They're actually fermented fruits, and it's just well made so well, and it's very nice. And as you say, we can put them in mixed drinks just like that, drink them as a wine, a dessert. It's just delicious. They have it in grapefruit as well. So it's grapefruit, pomegranate, lychee, and passion fruit. And it's just a delicious drink.
And with the word delicious, I want to thank you. We are going to share many of these ideas and recipes, and I will follow up with information on how to reach Pearl Schwartz. And again, please tell everybody the name of your store and your Facebook where they can find you.
Okay, it's Hakerem Wines, and the Facebook page is at Hakerem Wines.
Well, thank you so much. Have a happy and a healthy new year. And remember, everybody, she has such a well-stocked store. She has the best tastings, and she's just a good person and would love to share with you any questions and answers you would need. She's the one to go to. Thank you so much for joining Cindy's Corner, and we will speak soon.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Have a healthy new year. Thank you.
Thank you. My next guest is Alan Zwirn. He was supposed to join us last week, and many of you heard about Alan or read about Alan on Madison's about his race. He's running for the state assembly in New York, but he held a press conference and is trying to get the public aware of the dishonesty in public schools. So I believe Alan is on the line now. Hello, Alan?
Hello there, Cindy. How are you today, Cindy? You got me?
Good. Have you, and I'm glad, because last week we had some technical difficulties, and you are busy campaigning and working hard and meeting people, so I'm honored that you took the time to call us tonight. But what Alan did was so important 2 weeks ago at a press conference. He took the time to actually research and get actual facts about dishonesty in the school system, and I am just so happy that you are sharing this, because so many people from around the country contacted me directly about your work and said to me, Cindy, this is not happening just in this area. This is happening in the Midwest. It's happening in the South. It's happening on the West Coast. So, Alan, please share with everybody a little bit about what you're doing and what you plan to do when you win the assembly, and tell them exactly from where you are coming from and who your opponent is, so they can reach out to people in your district and tell them to support you.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Cindy. Alan Zwirn is my name, and I'm running for the 23rd Assembly District seat. That's in South Queens, going across all of Rockaway and across State Boulevard through Broad Channel, Howard Beach, into Ozone Park, Hamilton Beach, Lindenwood, Centerville. Those are all the little communities that are within it, and Old Howard Beach. So that area of Southern Queens is not only has issues with education. In the borough of Queens, there are 20 schools that are on the state's list for review, and 10 of them are in the district that is within the assembly district that I'm trying to become the assembly representative for. But I've also been a career educator in the New York City schools. a full career and teaching in many different places, mostly in Brooklyn, but I've taught in schools all over the city, and I've taught every level from kindergarten through graduate school. I've done work at two of the city colleges, and I've been mentoring new teachers through a local university for the last 8 years. So I've seen how the education system is running, and over the past few years, I've become more and more disappointed with the way they're reporting their statistics. And back under the Bloomberg administration, he did a thing where he sort of made a business model. And it was a good idea to statisticize everything that was going on in the schools, the graduation rates, the test scores, you know, passing rates, attendance, and look at it and see where we can improve. That's terrific. However, that also set the bar as to what the mayor of the city of New York takes the responsibility for mayoral control, and it set the bar as to how the students should be doing. Numbers can be manipulated and massaged, like all statistics, to represent an image that things are getting better. I can give you an example in the fact that in summer school, there were 22,000-plus students in the summer school program back in 2010, but in 2015, there were 2,616 students. So is it because there's been a sudden outbreak of student achievement during the school year, or during the summer courses, social promotion is back in style? So, and they say, oh, look, we're getting better and better because there's less and less students going to summer school. And you know that there's something wrong with those numbers. And that's the kind of thing that tipped me off to it. And then you get to the City University of New York and the State University of New York. Our high school graduates, nearly 80% of them need remediation courses to take college courses. That's been established as New York City has 6 2-year institutions. And 80% of these students who go to those institutions need remediation. And the state university found that they were spending $70 million a year for remediation courses for students coming out of the New York City schools and other schools in the state. So there's something going on. How are these students passing? And I'd like them to do better. I don't want to stop them, but I also don't want them to live in an illusion that they can when they find out the hard way after they graduate that they're having difficulty.
We are also finding that there is dishonesty in the actual discussions of safety in schools and also in special education follow through with IEPs and what are requirements in the school system. Did you find that as well?
Well, the IEPs are an interesting point. But I would like to see IEPs for every student because the IEPs are trying to create a plan for education for the student. They've done that for special ed, but there are students who can soar if someone was to look at their records and say, you know what, they're strong in math and they need a little work in language arts. Let's get them that and push them further ahead. The same thing with the students who have difficulties in different things. IEPs are something that it should be an individual plan for every individual student. That would be fair. Cindy, you there?
I am here.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you also, Alan is in a district that he is running in that has been run by the same people from the congressman on down that have had control for many, many years. And it's sort of what Donald Trump has been saying, that with all the same people from a similar party, that there really has not been any positive results coming from it. Am I right, Alan?
Well, it's the same old, and it's people vote. The representatives are voting with their party versus voting for the people that they represent. And I'd like to see that come to an end. My particular opponent is the daughter of a former assemblywoman. And the day after the current assemblyman announced he was not going to run, she went and changed her name to add her maiden name to her name so she got name recognition. This is something that's legal, but at the same time, it's a little bit dishonest. All of a sudden, she becomes this person that she gets that name, and so, oh, I know her mom, that kind of thing. She's riding someone else's coattails, and, you know, I get it. Whereas myself, I have a grassroots campaign, and I'm earning what I'm doing and earning – and I've achieved during my life that I haven't had strings pulled for me. And that's what my opponent, unfortunately, is working on pulling strings.
What's very interesting, Alan, like I said, I had tremendous, tremendous response from readers who contacted me directly, how they are amazed. You know, Pete, you're in Queens, New York, but this is happening in all over the country, this dishonesty, this manipulation or twerking it to make things seem as if they're going on that really aren't happening. And so you should be very proud of yourself because you took it on as a new person running. This is your first time running for office. And, I mean, you really took a big undertaking, and we are very lucky that we have you to do something like this. And tell people where they can reach out to you directly, help you, tell them exactly who you're running against and what's going on, because you are in a district that you are a Republican and a conservative, and you're in a heavily Democratic district, and you are the voice of what we are actually trying to change and make better. So please share that information with my listeners.
Sure. My name is Alan Zwirn. The last name is spelled Z-W-I-R-N, and you can find my website at Zwirn4Assembly.com. When you go on there, you'll find a few videos of my policies. One is introductory, and you can read up on things that my policies are about. I also have an idea about trying to add a dozen officers to every police precinct in New York City. That would add 2 patrol cars. That would increase safety and possibly just reduce crime because of the image of patrol of more men on the beat, men and women in blue on the beat. You know, so it's beat policing in a sense, but from the cars. And if we can do that, and actually it's about the same amount of money as the state spends on the students that has to give remediation. So if they didn't have to give remediation, we could afford these police officers. And this would, I think, add to the economy of the state because people wouldn't mind going out in the evening. More people would go to restaurants or go shopping. And that's just another one of the things I'd like to see. On the education side, I'd like to see a bill passed that makes it a criminal act to manipulate the statistics, just that would be as it would be a criminal act for a business person to manipulate the price of their business or the stock price. You know, that's called fraud. And for the policing, I'd like to see a bill that adds these police to all the precincts in New York City.
Alan, I call tonight celebrating and cleaning up. And I meant cleaning up in the education system. And you are a leader in it. And I am so proud to call you my friend, to call you a patriot, to support you. And I am so proud of the work you're doing and the great response that I've been getting from people and who want to follow you. So continue it. And we look forward to hearing more successes from you in the future. Thank you, Alan. Warren, running for Assembly in Queens, New York.
Thank you, Cindy. It's been great to talk to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. I would like to tell you a little bit about why this discussion on cleaning up education is so important. I was actually asked to do Cindy's Corner through my education activism and the work I've done with my book, Rubber Room Romance, which you can get through Madison's. And it is the first book of its kind, like a Danielle Steele type of a novel, where it tells about the everydays going on in school. So from that, it went on to various interviews, to writing articles, to meeting the people at Madison's, and for them to ask me to do Cindy's Corner. Well, from Cindy's Corner, I have been asked to help co-host an event with the Conservative Society Action of America, and it's going to take place October 27th. It's called Solutions for Education Forum. And one of the reasons I was asked to do this is because parents, teachers, principals, taxpayers, and local community people are all asking what is going on in the education system, whether or not they're a progressive or the most conservative. Our next guest is named Francesco Portellis, again, another person who has been a leader in fighting and cleaning up what is going on in schools. His story has been in the papers for several years, and he's on the phone now to share his story with us. Welcome, Francesco, to the show.
Thank you, Cindy. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that introduction.
Very briefly, because we've been covering your story and you've had, I really want you also to update your everybody about what's been going on. Tell them briefly about your experiences, what happened to you, how you had a diary, and what's been going on in the court since.
Sure, I'll give the briefest synopsis that I can that started in 2011. Actually, a little before that, I was an engineer who decided to take a cut in salary, about $20,000 or so, and become a New York City teacher. In a troubled income, high rate of free lunches, which is what they use to monitor the socioeconomic status of the community. And everything was going fine for about 4 years. I was getting awards, commendations for creating an engineering lab in this tough middle school. And then I became a parent, and that changed everything in the community. I live about a mile from the school. And without really realizing it, I start seeing the school system as a parent, not just as an educator. So not just the four walls of my classroom, but really beyond that. And I start getting more involved. And as Alan just said about the issues that take place, I start seeing things about data and information that I didn't like. And I was like, wait, my son's going to come to the school in 10 years, which is the middle school age, and I have some cleaning up to do. And I got involved, and I found corruption, and I found fraud, and my principal was hiding the $7.7 million budget, and I kind of just spoke up. So unbeknownst to me, I thought that if you reach out to the proper agencies like the Special Commissioner of Investigation and let them know what's going on, that you'll be protected, and they'll go after the wrongdoers. I was wrong, and after I blew the whistle on my principal, who was also involved in double dipping, particularly charging the taxpayers for two separate programs at the same time, I was then put under 38 investigations, exiled from the classroom, sent two boroughs away to Queens to a basement from Staten Island. And, you know, I had the choice, like all species, fight or flight, and I chose fight. I created a blog, naively called it Protect Portellos, which is not my last name, thinking that, okay, this is happening to me. Let me just, it had a ring to it. I didn't know I was not the only one this was happening to. I was naive. I didn't know the rubber rooms. You know, I didn't know any a lot of that stuff. So I called it Protect Portellos. And I think it caught them off guard, them being the district, them being the, you know, Department of Education, the Commissioner's Office for Special Investigations, because now I was exposing everything they did to me. I would blog about it. And then I started learning about other people's story, and I created other blogs and other activist groups like Don't Tread on Educators and UFT Solidarity. Fast forward, I went through a hearing, 21 days, cost taxpayers a lot of money. They tried to fire me. They were unsuccessful. The investigators actually had to admit that they planted files into my computer that they confiscated from my classroom. I mean, again, city investigators, not DOE. Talking about a very fast synopsis of crazy story. And I'm back to teaching since 2014, out of the rubber room 2 years. And I'm going around every school in Staten Island teaching anything from pre-K to 8th grade because I'm almost like a glorified substitute, which is called absent teacher reserve. And I obviously filed a federal lawsuit, First Amendment. I spoke up. I was retaliated against. Unfortunately, after 4 years, after 4 years, we got in front of a federal jury, a federal judge this past August, and we were unsuccessful for the following reasons. And I really don't want anyone being discouraged thinking, okay, you know, let me just give up. That's not what I'm saying here. What happened was we had a lot of instances of speech. We had a lot of instances of adverse action. And with the First Amendment speech case, you need to kind of show that, hey, you spoke up and then you were acted on. And I had that in my evidence, except the judge precluded us from really presenting that in front of the jury. And then furthermore, when it came down to the jury's instructions on what to use, she cut it down even further. For them, they saw adverse action against me, then me speaking up, which is kind of putting like the carriage behind in front of the horse. And that messed us up, and they had no choice but to vote against us. And now we're appealing. So that's a 4-year story in about few minutes. Did that cover it?
To top it off, that was a great. And what I just want to tell them, to top it off, you got a bill this week for the legal fees. Want to just fill them in with that.
So if we won, and let's say they awarded me anything, you know, let's say they awarded me $50,000. It would be $50,000, and then we'd ask for the legal fees. You know, I've had a lawyer for 4 years. It's over $600,000 in legal fees. Not that I've paid that much, but that's what's been billed or so. I mean, I'm just using that number. We would ask the city to pay that money. Now, because we didn't win, they're saying, okay, we're the victors. Now you pay us the legal fees. You know, it's kind of like Goliath saying, okay, you didn't beat me. Now I'm just going to keep coming at you. And they gave us a bill for $14,000. Now, that's not the legal fees of all the lawyers and everything, but I guess they just use some transcription fees to show you the waste and the and taxpayers and the mismanagement. They charge us, for example, $600 for a transcript that they hired a company to do from one of our conferences at the court. We found the same transcript online available through the court system for $9. So they're charging
us
$600.
And that's taxpayer money. Again, I want people to be very aware of this. This is taxpayer money. And
yeah,
this is everyone, also, Francesca
right.
said it, and I want everybody to realize it. He is not the unique person in this. I get at least 24 calls a day from teachers, from parents that are retaliated against because they go and complain about a teacher or a lesson or a principal, from paralegals, from even administrators who get pressure because of certain situations. So it's not just teachers that are affected like this. This is anybody who's in a school system. Am I right?
Right.
Would you say that's fair?
Exactly. More than fair. I mean, exactly what you said. We're getting so many calls that I'm so happy to be part of a group called UFT Solidarity because I couldn't handle the intake of all the calls coming in, so we created an email system called help@uftsolidarity.org. So let's say someone messages me from a friend that got my number or through Facebook. I tell them, please email us at help, activists who respond, and it's really helped out. But then when I get the calls from assistant principals who complain about their principals attacking them, I think that's so strange that I'm in this position now getting these calls. And then when principals call me, listen to this, that their superintendents are after them, and they're like, look, I know you're in the UFT and I'm in the CSA. Like, sometimes they don't even tell me their name. They're like, what do I do? I said, okay, well, go to this website and click Educator Survival Guide, and I'm pretty sure it could work for you. And it involves doing some freedom of information requests. It involves, you know, we have a little guide out there to help people. But isn't that crazy that, yeah, you're right. And the parents that call us that ask for services for their students or that question something or want to run for PTA president. I mean, in my termination hearing, I had the PTA president come testify on my behalf. A week later, she was banned from coming into the building, and she's the PTA president.
What tax dollars are paying for. People think you go to public school, that it's all safe and fair. And it's Francesco is going to be one of the people involved in the Solution for Education Forum we're having, along with many other educators and administrators and parents and community leaders, because there is something wrong with this. Whether or not you're a Democrat or a Republican or you are U of T or you aren't U of T, I mean, even his whole election, how he was banned in certain situations and wasn't allowed to do things, is a whole other story. And all of my listeners, we will follow this up on a regular basis, and you can follow up as Francesco said on his website that he is, if you Google him, it's very easy to find him because he is a warrior for anti-corruption, your tax dollars. The biggest problem I have, and I know that you have, is probably the fact that people think they know what's going on and they really don't. Or people are very selfish to their own situation and they don't want to look at the bigger picture of helping one another. Do you find that?
Yeah, I mean, it's I just want to talk about the first part of that. Even I, sitting in the rubber room, I feel so stupid that it took me so long to figure out. I mean, email after email to Chancellor Walcott at the time and Mayor Bloomberg, my rubber room inmates, let me call them, or fellow rubber room educators, who, by the way, most of which were veteran teachers and union chapter leaders and delegates. The media doesn't tell you that. The media doesn't tell you that the rubber rooms are full of activists and vocal people. They tell you pedophiles and whatever. Anyway, they're looking at me and they're like, Portelos, you're doing this wrong. You're thinking that Bloomberg and Walcott are for the children and this and that. You know, what if it's just about money and corruption? And when I snapped that puzzle piece that's been missing, that didn't make sense, because I had my robotics team was like number one in the city for robotic design, and I'm emailing the mayor about it. I was like, I'm in the rubber room. It's really my principal stealing money, blah, blah. It all made sense. Once I snapped that piece in, that the UFT, our union is not supporting us, that the school system isn't about the kids, more about covering up. Everything made sense, and it's a very hard pill. You got to understand, Cindy, you and I went through it, but it's a very hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, and even people who are not in the situation you and I were in, who are reading my stuff on Facebook, it took them a while to believe it until they started seeing their colleagues. It's so rampant now that everyone's seeing it. Called me from the rubber room, who were just assigned, never had a problem, and they knew exactly what to do and what was going to happen because they read it on our blogs. I'm like, I can't believe it. I'm reassigned. I'm like, yeah, now this is what's going to happen next. I was like, this is exactly who you're going to talk to, and they're going to send you far from your district because that's what they do to drive you crazy. But it's a very hard pill to swallow. I mean, remember what I said?
I will tell you, I just want to get into something you just said.
Sure.
You talk about people are looking for – a lot of people are aware of it but are afraid to speak up, and that's a big problem also. And one of the issues we're having with this forum we're putting together, I'll give you a great example. Somebody wrote to me about special education, and this was a special education teacher. They don't have to learn about education and social studies because in special education classes, they don't have time to teach social studies. Or why would somebody who is 70 years old care about education? That was another question I got recently from somebody. But that person is a taxpayer, and that person lives in a state, not in New York, but another state that's very high tax, that has city tax, state tax, and federal tax. And they wanted to know where their money was going. And you gave several great descriptions there of why everybody has to become very astute about what's going on. And you brought up the fact that teachers are, you know, the quality of educators that are being pushed into this situation. People want fair evaluations. You want a sweater, you decide whether or not you go to Macy's or Lord & Taylor for that better quality. That makes sense. But it has to be an objective and fair situation. One problem that I always see and everybody discusses, you always see teachers or principals in the most bizarre situations that are either in an inappropriate sexual activity or a criminal. Would you say most of the people you met are like that, or they're not like that?
A lot of the people I met in general in education or in the reassignment
center? In the situation, in either situation.
No. I mean, look, so I'm in Staten Island, which I think is like a different beast than the other five boroughs for some reason. I mean, even the complaints I get aren't from my own borough. So most of the people I've run into are good people who want to educate children, and that's the primary job. I don't find lazy people. I do find a lot of docile people, and that troubles me because they know what they're doing and they know what they're teaching might not be the best thing, but they're afraid to speak up. So whether the questions in front of a kindergarten class, like I covered a kindergarten class once, and I'm sorry if I'm going off topic, but the question was
no,
algebra.
This is important. They have to, our listeners have to learn what goes on every day in a situation, especially from someone who is so in the know. So continue on.
Yeah, so the kindergarten teacher's walking out of the room as I'm going in to cover, and as she told me what they're doing. They're doing the number 15. I was like, okay. You know, I have an engineering degree. I'm pretty sure I could teach the number 15. She's like, yeah, just click through these slides. And, you know, whenever I'm given a lesson, I always try and throw my own, you know, into it just so I'm not like a robot. And I look at this question in front of these kindergarten students, and there are 15 flowers. 10 of them have bees on them, one each. How many more bees do we need to fill all 15? And when you really look at that, that's algebra. That's, you know, what is it, 10 plus X equals 15. I'm like, and I look at these kids, one of them's picking their nose, the other one's looking in the sky, and I was like, yeah, it'd be doing the same thing. I mean, looking in the sky. I mean, I thought that was too much, and when she came back, I was like, we're really teaching them? She's like, yeah, what are we going to do? This is what they're telling us to do. And this is everywhere. You know, shop has been replaced with more ELA, more math, less recess. And, you know, if we weren't so docile, I think we could do something. And that's where I tried, you know, to run for union president to kind of unify all these and let's work with the parents, because I'm sure the parents don't want, you know, most of the parents don't want this. They want to, kindergarten students should be playing with blocks, learning their own thing, and then moving on. I mean, that's what Finland, I think Finland doesn't start teaching their, doesn't put their kids into school until seven years old, if I'm not mistaken. So
correct.
That's why I think it affects us. And if I could just give one quote I really like, and to answer
yes.
the 70-year-old woman.
Please close up with a very inspiring quote. That would be wonderful for the
okay.
audience.
Yeah, I put it on the end of my email, all my emails. And it answers why a 70-year-old person would care what someone's learning social studies and special ed. And it's the Greek philosopher Diogenes who said the foundation of every society is the education of its youth. And I think, end quote, that's it. I mean, that's why people should care, because that student is going to grow up and either be a great citizen or troubled citizen who's going to be a burden on society, burden on taxpayers. And I think that's why everyone should care about what we're talking about here.
I cannot thank you enough for joining me, for always being there for everybody. Everybody knows your name because of the steps you took to lead the charge of the questionable practices of how educators are treated if they want to speak up to, like you said, not be docile, to correct a wrongdoing, to enhance something with a personal touch to a lesson, to be the best they can be, and to really have an impact on the future of our country.
No, no problem.
Thank
Anytime,
you.
I mean, always a pleasure to, again, not really just push my story, but kind of just share what's really going out there, because we need to be educated.
Well, we had somebody who's running for office, who is trying to who exposed some of the dishonesty and is trying to make change. We had one of the best known educators, and my next guest is a parent who got involved, a parent of a public school child. So again, thank you. We're going to fill in more information about the Solutions for Education Forum in Queens. We're going to follow and support you through your ventures in trying to help improve education, because it seems to be a very hot topic on all levels of elections happening in November. And again, thank you for joining us, and we look
thank
forward
you.
To speaking with you soon. Thank you.
Take care, Cindy. Thanks.
My last guest tonight, as I mentioned, is a public school parent who was not very happy with what she saw and decided to be a warrior of her own for her own child, and that warrior now has one of the largest followings internationally. I am welcoming to the show Rachel Cohn, who is the founder of Choose to Refuse the Common Core. Hello, Rachel.
Hey, how are you? Hi, good evening.
How are you?
Thank God.
Good evening
and you?
To you.
Good.
Hello, Rachel.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
We just finished two segments, one with someone running for office that exposed through extensive research dishonesty in the schools, and we had an educator who exposed questionable practices and how teachers, parents, administrators are treated if they want to expose things that don't seem right. And you are closing up as a parent. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you started to become a parent activist.
Well, 5 years ago, I was doing homework with my son. And first I saw that the math was changing, but then my son was going to private school. So I really didn't pay much attention to it. But at that point, my son came home, and I was reading a story with him that was depicting the parents as old, outdated, old-fashioned, and it started to pique my interest as to why they would be depicting parents in such a negative light. So as the days went on, I started to look through and review my son's work that he was coming home with, and I saw that a lot of the literature was anti-American and anti-parent. Now, this was 5 years ago. So I basically joined Facebook to see if I was either out of my mind or if there were like-minded people like me who saw that was there was something wrong in the schools. So I joined Facebook, and a lot of the groups, I joined some groups, and I saw that people were not really speaking. People were just speaking, and they weren't really acting. So I decided that I was going to contribute 100,000 anti-Common Core bookmarks, distribute them nationwide, and that's what I did. So I started a group called Choose to Refuse Common Core, and for 3 weeks I asked people to take my bookmarks free of charge, which included the shipping, and I was able and successful to do that. My numbers started rising in my group. So from that time on, I just continued with my group. And also another reason why I began my group was because I wanted to bring a little spirituality into the mix. If I want to say a blessing like, God, please bless our children, freedom of Common Core, I would be able to do so without the backlash that I would get in other groups. So Common Core seemed to be like an onion, and every peel that was coming off seemed to be worse than the next. The worst peel that I seemed to have found was 2 years ago, my son, who was in public school, he's autistic and he's mainstreamed in school, he started to learn about the religion Islam. Now, I thought there was no learning of religion in schools, so it really didn't set off any alarm bells. But when my son was, he paces as he studies, when I heard him say that the God of Muhammad is the same God as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I realized that something was going awry. So I called the school, and the school made me out to seem like I was basically out of my mind. I hired an attorney. The attorney sent a letter to the schools stating that there should be no religion taught in schools at all. And the bottom line was that I was bullied by the school when my attorney called me and told me that if I don't drop the Islam, actually being against religion in schools, that the school would come after me in legal fees, and basically they would sue me, and I would have to incur legal fees, which would basically take away my home and legal fees. So I was silenced into submission. And from what I hear from your last guest, educators, anybody that's putting up a fight against Common Core in the schools is being bullied into being quiet. So little by little, my group started growing, and I became very vocal about not having a religion in schools, not having, a lot of the literature that was coming home was anti-American. And the last agenda which came out was the transgender push, which is basically trying to confuse our children about their sexual identity. Last year in kindergarten, children were told that if they felt that they wanted to be the opposite sex, that they can do so. Even they came out with new national sex ed standards, which actually changed the meaning of gender to include gender means how you feel, not just being male or female, but how you feel about it. If you feel like you're more of a male, you can be a male. If you feel like you're more of a woman, you can be a woman. So our children are being told, basically, that by fifth grade, which is 10 years old, they should already know what they're attracted to, whether they're attracted to males, whether they're attracted to females, whether they're asexual. And as I read the standards, which is available to anybody, I also have it downloaded onto my group, you will see that the sexual standards are very inappropriate as far as age is concerned. And there was also a study out that said that our children are not ready to learn the sexual standards at the age that they're being presented to. So I basically was thrown into this, not willingly, but I realized that if they take our generation, a generation of children, which are going to be anti-American, unpatriotic, against the parents, we're going to lose our children that way. So that's why I became involved, so involved.
And you have over 31,000 people on your very fast-growing list. And two things that are wonderful about your group is that loads of people share. If you need information, if you need accurate textbooks where this is happening, or class lessons, homework assignments, books in libraries that kids are using in addition to what they're given in class, people are sharing it from all over, from public schools, private schools, charter schools, even some people who homeschool because they are getting their materials from districts so that they can fit the needs of their state requirements. So it's wonderful what you have. Rachel, I have two questions for you because this is something that I find that's a very big problem, and maybe you could help my listeners with it. First of all, few people actually can identify correctly what is Common Core.
Common Core is a set of standards which is created when No Child Left Behind was created. So when people tell you that Common Core is a set of standards and it's not really the curriculum is aligned to the standards. So basically the curriculum is the standards. So the Common Core is a set of standards, but the curriculum is aligned to the standards, so they're basically the same thing. It's just a play on words. So people like to say, well, Common Core is not a curriculum. Common Core is a set of standards, but it's basically the same thing because the curriculum is being aligned to these standards. And every state has the same exact standards. So it's not as if, certain states are choosing their curriculum. 42 states signed on to Common Core sight unseen. The federal government went to all the states and said basically that if you do not sign on to Common Core, you will not get your federal funding. So 42 states signed on to this curriculum without seeing the curriculum. That has to tell you something.
Then the next question, and you sort of hit on it, and I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I want to finish this. A lot of people align the opt-out testing movement to Common Core, and I know I have to try to explain to them the differences and who's working with it, and maybe you can explain it in your words, what the differences are and how they are related and how they're not related.
Well, I don't really go down the road of opt-out. I choose to refuse on a federal level. Because we have federal parental rights, which we are able to actually refuse lessons in school which we deem are inappropriate. So when a person opts out, they're opting out of state testing on a state level. But if we use our federal parent to refuse state testing, we're going in on a much stronger note on a federal level to refuse state testing. You can also refused a lesson on the human reproduction system, which I found out had a lot of nefarious lessons, such as a 10-year-old will be given a video to view of a live birth happening. You know, I did not want my child to see a live birth happening because I don't think that at that point he is ready in his mind to see something like that. Or they transgender issues in when during the teaching of the human reproduction system. So any lesson that you seem or deem inappropriate, you can refuse using your federal parental rights. And the federal parental rights are in place by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court put them in place, and not many people know that. Not many people know that you can refuse state testing and certain assignments or certain lessons on a federal level, which is why I tell people not to opt out. And opt out also insinuates that you opted in. And I don't believe any parent in their right mind would opt in to the Common Core curriculum.
Mm-hmm. I find with the Common Core curriculum, and this is something you and I are familiar with, a lot of it, because it distorts facts and changes history and changes maps, encourages in a lot of ways bias and prejudice. And I'll give you two examples that I see a lot on your website and through your members, because they're sharing it constantly. One is in regard to slavery and the history of African Americans in America. And there are handouts and there are even pieces in textbooks that are shared where it makes it seem as if people came here from Africa by choice so that they can be compensated for their life. And I know that's something that we've discussed, and I know you've discussed with a lot of people how this distortion of facts is creating a lot of hatred and prejudice that's not needed, because it's really being taught wrong, and it's building, you know, very bad feelings among people. And the other thing that we find is, and I hear this all the time, and maybe you can share, like I have teachers call me that when we discuss the Common Core curriculum in regards to anti, they tell me they don't teach anti-Semitic lessons because they're reading the Diary of Anne Frank, but then they're teaching that Israel doesn't exist anymore and it's Palestine. Do you find a lot of that, and what are some of the responses you get in regards to that?
Well, I've had my children come home and say that they learned or that they were taught that the Palestinians are being oppressed by the Israelis, okay? Now, you and I both know that is not true, to the point where I actually took my children to Israel this past summer, took them to the wall by Rachel's tomb, and took them to a place where they can actually look over the wall and see the other side into quote-unquote Palestine. Now, they saw very nice buildings, air conditioning. Not only that, but they saw thousands of Palestinians leaving their work and going back into Palestine after working in Israel. So the Palestinians are anything but oppressed, and I wanted my children to be able to say that they were there and they saw it for their own. But even the Diary of Anne Frank became the diary of a little girl. So they're even changing the name so that it becomes more of an like the fable instead of a real true story. And that's what they seem to be doing even with the American history. You know, when you read the American history, everything is anti-American. They talk about how the Americans basically how they did this to the Indians or they, you know, just basically just talking about America as being the oppressors of the world, you know, which is not true. I mean, America has its faults, but America is the most charitable nation on earth. And we do a lot of good in the world, too, but they never point that out to our children. And our children are becoming anti-American. They're thinking of, even I have a child who's in eighth grade now. I call him my Common Core baby. He really truly believes that I am old and I've lived my life already. He believes that America should be more global. He considers himself a global citizen instead of an American citizen. And to me, that's very dangerous, because we have to be Americans first. Just like when a plane is going down, they tell you to put the mask on first so you can help other people. That's what, to me, being American is. You have to be American first and able to help other people or help the world, quote-unquote, the global society. But that, what they're trying to do is they're trying to take away our American patriotism and make our children to think of themselves as global citizens. And to me, that is very, very dangerous. And they're honestly, they're succeeding.
Well, Rachel, we can go on and on with this. Please tell everybody where they can find you and your website, how they can join, how they can share material.
Right. My page is on Facebook. It's called Choose to Refuse Common Core. And you will find many of the lessons. If you need proof of what is happening in our schools, we are the only anti-Common Core page revealing the truth about the Islamic indoctrination of our children in our schools and the transgender push, meaning confusing our children about their sexual identity. And we have so much proof that it's undeniable, totally undeniable. And I wish everybody would choose to become informed, because we really need to help our children out of this Common Core predicament that they are in every day in school.
Well, I want to thank you, and Rachel will be joining us at the Solutions for Education Forum on October 27th, and we will be following up with her information for our listeners. And what's amazing is this is not just happening in New York or California. She has examples internationally with every kind of group involved. So, Rachel, I want to thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Look forward to hearing more from you and working together with you to help improve education.
Thank you so much. Be well. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
And with that, we are ending tonight's Cindy's Corner. And I must tell you that next week I am very, very excited. We are going to have an exclusive discussion with Rick Tyler. And many of you know who he is. Many of you are very fond of his work and follow him. And I'm very happy that we are going to have an exclusive with him discussing Ted Cruz, discussing what happened when he was running the campaign in Iowa, discussing what's going on with Donald Trump now, discussing what he's doing at MSNBC, and the future of conservative America. So from all corners of the world, good night from Cindy's Corner.